Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Our first case for this morning is number 081966, Bradley Botvinnik versus Rush University Medical. Mr. Schrader.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Schroeder for the plaintiff. As you know, this is a case involving the scope of the Illinois Medical Studies Act, and what the district court did is it held that the act barred the plaintiff from obtaining the discovering the substance of any communications between the defendants and the medical facility down in Florida where he had a job and was trying to secure permanent privileges. We contend that that ruling was overly broad and was based upon an erroneous construction of the Illinois Medical Studies Act. As the briefs we filed point out, the Medical Studies Act is conditioned upon communications and information relating to a doctor's, quote, professional competence, unquote. And the allegations at issue here, which the plaintiff believes were communicated to the facility down in Florida, do not concern anything regarding Dr. Botvinnik's professional competence. They instead concern an incident in which someone who we don't know other than Dr. Botvinnik alleges it was not him, ordered sexually explicit items for some other doctors that were on staff at the Rush University Medical Center during the time that Dr. Botvinnik was there serving his anesthesiology residency.
Well, why shouldn't the term professional competence in the statute be given a broad construction, considering the apparent import of the statute to protect these sorts of communications for the good of delivery of medical services?
First, Your Honor, my answer to that would be this is a privilege, and generally speaking, privileges are to be construed narrowly. And my second answer would be, respectfully, that begs the question, because what is and is not professional competence is the heart of this case, and whether he ordered sexually explicit items for anybody has nothing to do with his skills as a doctor. It does not relate to his...
No, but it has to do with whether you want him on your staff or not if you're a hospital.
I think that...
If you're using hospital facilities to produce the pornographic materials on top of everything else. But the fact is, they want to know everything about the applicant.
Well, if they wanted to know everything, Your Honor, then I submit to you that the General Assembly should have used something, words to that effect, and not used the words professional competence.
Well, doesn't how he interacts with his fellow professionals have some bearing on his professional competence, how he plays with others, if you would?
Well, and to a degree, Your Honor, I would agree with that. How was his bedside manner, for instance? But this, something, but ordering sexually explicit items and having them delivered to a fellow doctor on staff, I think is beyond the reasonable interpretation you could give to the term professional
competence. If I recall correctly, Jack the Ripper was supposed to be a doctor because the surgical precision with which he dispatched his patients, victims, indicated medical training. If I understand you correctly, if that was to the somebody you knew, it couldn't notify the next hospital about it because it has nothing to do with his professional training, because he did a fairly superb job professionally.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that if there's someone who we know is a murderer or has murderous propensities, that I would think relates to their competence. You don't want a doctor going around killing patients. But
you probably don't want a doctor going around with pornographic materials floating through his brain either. You want him concentrating on the medical aspect of it. I suppose pornography has some medical aspect from a biological point of view, but...
Well, that's what this case, again, is about, Your Honor. And our contention is that professional competence...
I understand.
You're drawing a line. I'm drawing a line such that I think professional competence does not encompass what was alleged to have been done here. If you draw that line such that it's within, then the Medical Studies Act privilege is going to apply, and we're pretty much done. But I think that's an overly broad interpretation of the term. And, again, it should be related to something that concerns, again, bedside manner, surgical skill, medical knowledge, something like that. To be extreme, say that he was a Cubs fan instead of a Sox fan. That, I think, would have nothing to do with his professional competence.
Yeah, they'd probably tell you about it.
Well, probably. But we weren't even allowed to find out what was said. And that's really where this case comes down to again. We didn't get the chance to find out what was said, so that we therefore did not have the chance to try and argue that what was said caused Dr. Botvinnik to lose his employment down in Florida.
He got employment in Florida, didn't he? It didn't interfere with his employment.
He did get another job, Your Honor, but
He's working now doing exactly what he would have.
But that's not a defense to a charge of tortious interference with contract, that you get a job somewhere else down the line. It may relate to his damages that he ultimately may or may not be able to recover, but it doesn't mean his...
Did he sue for breach of contract to the people that didn't hire him?
No, he did not sue the entity down in Florida. He withdrew his application once it became evident that he was not going to go anywhere.
And speaking of that, I'm curious, since you got stopped by the various privileges here, why didn't you get some discovery from Morton Plant to find out what their basis was?
It would have been a pointless act, Your Honor, because had we initiated anything, issued subpoenas or whatnot, the defendants would have moved to quash those subpoenas, arguing that if we couldn't force the defendants themselves to tell us what they said, we can't do indirectly what we couldn't do directly, and we wouldn't be allowed to do the same thing through discovery with anyone down in Florida.
Interesting.
I guess, how do you know that until you try?
We know that because the district court granted the protective order, and then on two occasions after that order was entered, we filed a motion to clarify the order and, in fact, a motion to reverse, asking the district court to reverse itself. Those were all denied. So we were 0-3, essentially, and we struck out. So we didn't. That's why we know it wouldn't have worked out, because we tried and we failed. That being all, I'll wait for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
May it please the Court, Tom Johnson on behalf of the five different doctors sued and Rush University Medical Center. I do want to talk about the Medical Studies Act, but before I get there, I want to underscore a point that Judge Tinder made, which is while the plaintiffs are quick to say that this case is about Dr. Ivankovich supposedly telling Morton Plant that Dr. Botvinnik was sending sex toys to doctors, we don't know what Morton Plant was thinking. There is not a shred of evidence in this case, mainly because no discovery was taken of Morton Plant, as to what they were thinking. Dr. Botvinnik, in his brief, talks about a call he got from Brian Fagan, his boss, and also a call he got from Bernard Masick, who's on the Morton Plant committee. But that was Dr. Botvinnik's testimony. It is hearsay testimony. We have no affidavit, no deposition testimony, nothing from his boss, much less Morton Plant. So we have no idea what was going on with respect to Morton Plant and why they had concerns exactly.
You wouldn't have to go to your people to get that information.
About what was going on with respect to Morton Plant?
Right.
I think they would have to go to Morton Plant to figure out their decision-making.
That's what I said. There's no reason to reach into your people.
Correct. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
That's your position.
Yes, absolutely. And the first order of business is, what is Morton Plant thinking? Remember, too, Dr. Botvinnik didn't have to withdraw his application. There is, if you look at the release document, there is an appeal and hearing procedure where if somebody says something about him, he gets a chance to look at that, gets a chance to contest it, and play that out in front of the credentials committee themselves. He forswore that remedy altogether. So we have no idea if this sex toy incident was the key for Morton Plant or not. There are lots of reasons why this case needs to be affirmed that have nothing to do with the Medical Studies Act. The release that Dr. Botvinnik signed, what I just mentioned about the absence of any evidence as to why Morton Plant was concerned about him, all the immunity statutes. But let me talk in my 10 minutes just briefly about the Medical Studies Act. One of the things the plaintiff is saying in this case is they were frustrated by Judge Guzman entering a protective order that precluded them from examining the Rush people about what they told Morton Plant. Now, there was an order entered very early in the case before any discovery, a protective order, which they cite. We know through discovery that, in fact, all of the defendants in this case had nothing to do with Dr. Botvinnik or his career in Florida, other than Dr. Ivankovich, who had one phone call on August 15th. The rest of them have literally nothing to do with him. So that phone call and that conversation from the plaintiff's perspective becomes important. Well, we get to Dr. Ivankovich's deposition, and they ask him, what did you say? We object on the basis of the Medical Studies Act. Any lawyer who is prosecuting that claim would say, as this lawyer did, I certify that question. I want to go to the judge on that. I want to test the privilege. Look at Dr. Ivankovich's deposition. They certified the question. But then what they didn't do is they never brought to Judge Guzman a motion to compel on that issue. You cannot come up to the appellate court and say, hey, the district judge was frustrating me but you never bothered to tender that issue to the district judge.
You can, but not successfully.
Well, well, that's good. But there was no effort to file a motion to compel. So, and they say, well, you know, Judge Guzman had entered this protective order in the early going of the case, but we cited in our brief at page 24 where Judge Guzman, twice before that Ivankovich deposition, said to the parties, I don't want to rule on questions in the abstract. You know, I don't want to rule about documents that you say are going to be trotted out. If you have a problem, quote, I guess you folks will stop the deposition, document your problem, and bring it up in a motion. That's April 18th, 2007, less than 60 days before the Ivankovich deposition. They knew they could come in and test this Medical Studies Act issue, but they didn't, and so our position is they waived it. They can't raise it now. But let's assume that this Medical Studies Act issue is before Your Honor. I think what you have to, Your Honors, I think what you have to remember is that in Illinois, for better or worse, the legislature and the courts have said that when it comes to staffing decisions by hospitals, we rely on the hospitals to police themselves. We have the doctrine of non-review, which says the courts can't second-guess who we hire as faculty or staff. We have the Medical Studies Act that invests these credentials committees with all this power and authority. We expect you to police yourselves. For that system to work, when Dr. Shea from the credentials committee of Morton Plant calls Dr. Ivankovich, he has to be able to get a return call from Dr. Ivankovich. If that kind of discussion about prospective applicants for jobs does not take place, that self-policing system will break down. Remember, Dr. Ivankovich, put yourself in his shoes for a second. And the only involvement Rush has at all is this one phone call on August 15th. Dr. Shea sends him a phone call. The phone message is in the record. And he then goes ahead and sends him a release and immunity agreement signed by Dr. Botvinnik. Dr. Shea, these are not two doctors talking at a country club or something. Dr. Shea is saying, I'm a member of the credentials committee. I have a release from this person. I want to talk candidly with you about this person. Now, Dr. Ivankovich could say, you know what, I'm going to take a pass. This is going to be nothing but trouble for me. I'd rather just bow out. I'm not going to do anything. The entire system is set up. The Medical Studies Act, all this non-review is set up so that Dr. Ivankovich says, no, you know what, I will go ahead and talk to you.
If there is a release.
Which there was in this case, okay, but even if there's not a release, he can rely upon the Medical Studies Act, which, if we take a look at the Medical Studies Act, they keep saying that the Medical Studies Act only deals with quote-unquote professional competence, which for them means clinical skills and academic skills. That's not what the statute says. We've laid it out in our brief. It makes privileged, let's assume there's no release, okay, and the call comes to Dr. Ivankovich. It makes privileged all information, comma, interviews, comma, reports, comma, statements, comma, memoranda, comma, recommendations, comma, then letters of reference or other third-party confidential assessments of a healthcare practitioner's professional competence, comma, or other data of the credentials committee. The statute makes everything privileged because that's the only way the system will work. They don't cite a single case to suggest it's not a comprehensive privilege. We've given you a bundle of cases, all of which have said these kinds of actions, these sort of backdoor actions to try to get at what people say about prospective candidates, can't stand because the system can't survive. So we have both the release, but we also have the Medical Studies Act. If the plaintiffs would prevail here, and what they want is they want the conversation from Ivankovich to Shea to be discoverable. They want the conversation out on the table, and then they want the judge to sort of pick apart the conversation and see which parts relate to what they call professional competence, and then to be able to sue Ivankovich for stuff that they regard as not related to professional competence. That's the way the court construes the Medical Studies Act, you can be sure that the next time Dr. Shea calls Dr. Ivankovich, he is not going to talk to him. He's not going to answer the call. Because once you allow that kind of intrusion into those discussions, that self-policing system, that has been set up for years and years in Illinois will break down.
Isn't there also a timing problem based on the withdrawal of temporary privileges which occurred?
Yes. In fact, we know that Ivankovich had nothing to do with whatever the problem is. Now, remember, August 1st, Botvinnik testifies he gets a call from his boss, and the boss says, you got a problem with your privileges. Then he testifies, Botvinnik, that Masek, a member of the committee, says, yeah, you got a problem, right? And but that's Botvinnik's say-so. We don't have the affidavits of either of those people. We don't know exactly what happened from Morton Plant's standpoint. But that occurs August 1st, August 2nd. That's 2 weeks before Ivankovich ever talks to anybody at Morton Plant. So whatever Morton Plant's problem was, we can be sure it didn't start with Dr. Ivankovich. So if the court has nothing further, I'll retire. Thanks.
Mr. Schrader, how much time? 4 minutes. You have 4 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will pick up where Mr. Johnson left off. And your question about a timing issue about loss of temporary privileges. First off, Mr. Botvinnik was not told with any sense of finality that his career at Morton Plant was doomed until sometime after August 15. So it therefore still remains an open question whether what Dr. Ivankovich did or did not say affected Morton Plant's ultimate decision to let Mr. Botvinnik know that his career there was not going to go anywhere. Also,
I'm still a little confused. You keep talking about Morton Plant like it was his employer. I thought he was just getting privileges there, and he's being employed by a doctor's group that had privileges there.
There is a doctor's group, Your Honor. I think what we're doing is sort of just using Morton Plant somewhat generically as name for the – it was
Well, I assume he had kind of a friendly relationship with this doctor's group. Why didn't he go to them for information about the reasoning?
We didn't go to them because, again, based upon Judge Guzman's rulings, not only the initial protective order, but the two times he denied our attempts to set it aside, and actually, if you look at his ultimate ruling that granted summary judgment, he again said the privilege applies flat out. That's why, because it would not have gotten us anywhere. And as we point out in the reply brief, we should not have to engage in an exercise in futility, and so we shouldn't be considered to have waived anything because it would not have gotten us anywhere, and I can demonstrate that because of these rulings that I just mentioned to you. The timing issue also, I think, assumes that there were no communications prior to August 15, and I know that Mr. Johnson would say that there weren't, other than a letter that Dr. Ivankovich sent in March. Our counter to that is, since this is summary judgment, you have to construe everything in favor to us. There was a very small number of people who knew that Dr. Botvinnik was seeking employment down in Florida. And those same people are the only people that also happen to know about this incident about sex toys. I think it's a fair inference that you can connect the dots and say somebody with that knowledge had to have contacted the people down in Florida at some point to trigger Florida to call Dr. Botvinnik and say, you've got a problem. And Mr. Johnson says that what we want is to discover the substance of Dr. Botvinnik's communications and then let the district court parse out what is and is not within the scope of the privilege. That is not what we're asking. If you look at our briefs, what we ask is that we be allowed to conduct discovery outside of whatever matters may be within the scope of the act. So I don't want to know about anything that talks about clinical skills, things of that nature. I want to know about, as we've said, what there is that's outside the scope of the act, which we believe this incident about sexual toys is. If you construe the term professional competence to basically mean anything about a doctor, I think you're stretching that term beyond any reasonable meaning, and you're basically rewriting the act to say anything goes. I don't think that was the intent of the General Assembly. That's it, Your Honor. My light is on. Thank you for your time. We ask that you reverse the district court.
All right. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.